really. Can you feel the tension in the air right now? I know I can. I can feel it all the way down in my plums.
You're tuned in to the FF Faceoff. Here, ready to drop the elbow on your competition, is Mike and Anthony. Ooh, yeah, dig it. Greatest, yeah, the FF Faceoff.
All right. Welcome back, folks, to the FF Faceoff. This is a podcast proudly brought to you by Fantasy Football King.
Behold the King, the King of Kings,
where we do have a little bit of Darnold on our mind. What's going on, everybody? Yes, thank you for tuning in. This is the FF Faceoff. This is, as I have advertised for a few weeks now, your one-stop shop for all things NFL. You want fantasy football talk? Done and done. You want some betting talk? Done and done. DFS? Done and done. Literally anything, we've got you covered. So there you go. So thank you for tuning in. We are going to be talking a little bit of Dynasty today. But of course, if you have anything else you want to comment in our live chat, you can feel free to do so. And as long as you're there, you might as well hit subscribe for you if you're watching. I guess now it's just Twitch and YouTube, right? You can't subscribe.
No. Periscope, Twitter is still alive. They're still there. I'm sure you can subscribe somehow or just follow us on Twitter and you'll see the broadcast.
Gorgeous. Stunningly gorgeous. So there you go. Now, listen, my name is Michael Hoff. You could follow me on Twitter at the FF Realist. My partner in crime with a very fantastic backdrop there, Anthony. His name is Anthony Servino. He could be followed the Real NFL Guru, and he's going to hook me up with one of those bad boys soon. But for now, Anthony, how's about you?
Mike, I'm doing fantastic today. About an hour ago, maybe a little bit more, there was breaking news in the NFL.
Yes, there was.
Pertaining to the New York Football Jets.
Yeah. So first things first, we will get into that trade. But as we do that, we will welcome in Josh Larkey.
Yes.
Who's going to be talking a little bit at Dynasty with us. Now, Josh Larkey, of course, he is from BreakoutFinder.com, Director of Analytics over at RotoWorld and Player Profiler. And somehow I imagine you guys have heard of that before. So there you go. Feel free to follow him at JLarkeyTweets. Josh, how's it going? And nice shirt.
Oh, thank you. I'm doing great. Excited to be here. I got this shirt yesterday, and I felt like this was a great place to debut it.
Well, I mean, listen, first time showing, then we're honored. See, now that officially means something, so I like it. There you go. Good stuff. But, yeah, we were just about to discuss here. We'll get into, you know, at some point you could tell everybody where they can check all your work, of course. But I also wanted to get your thoughts. Again, Anthony mentioned about an hour ago, it was announced that Sam Darnold has been traded from the Jets to the Panthers. Very much a layered thing, because I would imagine now this means the Panthers are out on Deshaun Watson. Turns out to be a sixth-round pick this year, a second and a fourth next year in the NFL draft. So, really, Josh, first things first, you can tell everybody where they can check out all your stuff, even though I already mentioned. Might as well give yourself a little bit of pump, but then talk a little bit about Darnold and what you sort of envisioned for him.
So, once again, just to reiterate, you can find me on Twitter at JLarkeyTweets, and you can just find all my work in general on playerprofiler.com and breakoutfinder.com. Get the Breakout Finder app. I think that's enough plugs for one day. Also, on Twitter, though, you I guess If you check my pinned tweet, I will personally teach you how to code in R for analytics using football data sets. So if you want to step up your analytics knowledge in the most fun way possible, you can find a link in my pinned tweet for that. Diving into the Darnold news. So my initial gut, I had two gut reactions. The first one was it felt a little bit light in the return to the Jets. I understand that Darnold isn't what he once was and that while the tools may still be there, the confidence might not necessarily be there.
Right.
However, it's still just a very light return for what's a hyper-talented, I want to say he's 23 currently, maybe 24, whatever it is, he's incredibly young. So it just felt like they could have gotten a little bit more back. There was no first round pick involved, anything like that. So I was a little shocked there. And then my second gut reaction is I'm a huge DJ Moore guy. And I kind of made just a funny tweet right when it happened, which was, what sins is DJ Moore atoning for? I don't exactly know what he's done in a past life, but his quarterback carousel that he suffered through is just so cruel. I don't know if he cheated his school girlfriend or went to the prom with the wrong girl. He did something along the way where someone got angry, and he has just been punished with these NFL quarterbacks.
No, he's essentially on that Allen Robinson path.
Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, Robinson's done just fine in football. However, yeah, I think we would all agree that Allen Robinson would have significantly better stats if his play was better. And it's the same with DJ Moore. He's a 1,200 receiving yards kind of guy. And I really want him to be able to enter that elite territory. And this move definitely doesn't add to the probability that he can do that.
And Sam Darnold, by the way, is 23 and 304 days. So just in case you want to get him a birthday gift at some point, you've got about, you know, you've got about 60 days to get that job done. So there you go. Anthony, what were your thoughts on this trade as this trade was announced?
I was kind of blown away. And not so much about the compensation, but more about the landing spot. I knew that the Carolina Panthers were heavily pursuing Deshaun Watson, and I completely understand why that they maybe pumped the brakes a little bit because of all the legal issues he's going through. And they went ahead and grabbed the Sam Darnold, who we really don't know Sam Darnold's true ceiling. He was a very, very early pick in an NFL draft, tons of upside. However, he was kind of strangle-held by Adam Gase and all of the other misfortunes on the New York Jets. It wasn't just Gase. It was injuries to all the personnel around him. And you know, you bring in Le'Veon Bell. Your head coach doesn't like him, makes it really known. And who knows if Le'Veon Bell was really into that or more into his rap videos he was putting out while in New York. They bring in Brashad Perriman at $1 million or $2 million cheaper than Robbie Anderson. Brashad Perriman has a laundry list of injury issues. And yes, he did thrive the year before for a couple of games with Jameis Winston. But Robbie Anderson, look what he did in Carolina with Teddy Bridgewater. So I don't know if it's all on Sam Darnold.
It's not. And I'll say this, and then I want to get one more opinion from Josh before we move it on. But I hope that Darnold does well with the Panthers. Not for any reason except I wanted to add to the mystique, to the lore, to the man, the myth, the legend, that being Adam Gase, just getting good players, ruining them, and then leaving. We've seen other players. And, you know, again, you know, Anthony, you talk about all these other things that were in the way on top of, on top of Adam Gase for Sam Darnold. You can make the same case for Ryan Tannehill. He had a lot of knee injuries, this and that. Things weren't going well when it started off for him. But Adam Gase goes away. Ryan Tannehill is now a well-paid, quality quarterback in the NFL. I only hope that Sam Darnold could achieve a fraction of that success just to add to that lore, because it makes me happy. So
that's it. Sam Darnold or Teddy Bridgewater, who's the starter? And I'll go even further. Is Teddy Bridgewater eventually moved either between now or at the NFL draft?
Yeah. Well,
depending on the contract.
Well, Josh, we'll kick that question to you. And I also wanted to, because, of course, you know, we are going to talk some dynasty today. So also just we're going to interweave into that. Just what do you think the value is there at the quarterback position in Carolina from a dynasty perspective?
So in terms of Bridgewater, I think that's quick. I don't think he's going to stay in Carolina. I think his dynasty value takes a hit. I think it's very apparent from this signing that they just weren't satisfied with what Bridgewater brought. And he was, I feel like he was never really the high ceiling option. He was kind of a higher floor stopgap kind of quarterback. With Darnold, I do think it helps his dynasty value. Though I don't think this precludes the Panthers from still drafting a quarterback in the first round this year. I do think it helps Darnold, just like you guys were saying, just to get out of the Jets organization. I think that's a win for him. He's still young enough that hopefully he hasn't been too tainted. So I think in that sense, it's got to be a win for Darnold, just that there's hope with a total reset in that sense.
All right, there you go. And, you know, before we get, we have a question, of course, we have an email question. But we might as well ask this of you, Josh, because now we have to ask this of everybody that comes on this program from now up until the draft. Who are the 49ers taking with the third overall pick? It's the most popular thing to talk about.
Coming from the 49ers fan.
No, but everybody's talking about it. Yes, and of course, selfishly, I'm a 49ers fan, so I do want to hear everybody's opinion. But I saw some rumors today suggesting that, you know, Kyle and John, that being Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, might not be on the same page as far as what quarterback they want to take. I'll just say I'm willing to bet that at some point in their time together, they didn't agree on a draft pick or they didn't agree on a position. It's worked out for them so far. So if that is actually even a thing, or if writers are just trying to keep this story alive, give it enough juice to get them to the finish line that is the NFL draft, let it be. They'll be fine. They'll kumbaya. They'll figure it out like they always do. And hopefully they get it right, because if they don't, it could set the franchise back a little bit. But with that, Josh, so what says you, 49ers third overall pick, who do you think is going to the Niners?
So I'm going to preface this by saying in no means am I a quarterback whisperer. I feel much more comfortable with my running back and wide receiver analysis.
Fair enough.
However, one thing that I noticed that I feel like it hasn't necessarily been talked about too much is that Garoppolo's kind of a statue. Same with Mac Jones. So I understand that parallel, where if you know that you had a good thing going with Garoppolo during their 2019 run, going all the way to the Super Bowl, that you'd naturally be attracted to getting a new, more talented quarterback with a similar enough skill set that you don't have to necessarily redesign your playbook. That being said, I think Fields is the much higher ceiling option. I think he's got a very good floor as well. That's who I would prefer to see there. However, I recognize that that also involves more work on the 49ers to completely remake their offense.
Right.
So currently where I stand is I would prefer Fields, but I understand the why someone like Mac Jones is getting pushed up the board and why he suddenly has become the most common guy to be linked there.
Yeah. Which is funny, because, you know, we had John Lobb on the other day, and John Lobb was saying back in December that Mac Jones would be a first round pick and people were calling him nuts. Now he's being discussed for the third overall pick. So, you know, life changes pretty quick.
Josh, I want to ask you the same question that I asked John Lobb. And we're going to get into landing spots later, because I am somebody, and this is why we bring guys like you, Josh, and John Lobb and others on the show, because you're draft gurus. I'm not. Mike's not. I'm a big landing spot matters type of guy. And for somebody like Mac Jones, and you can really pin this on any quarterback, like in my personal opinion, if Patrick Mahomes landed in Chicago, I don't know if Patrick Mahomes would have a Super Bowl victory, two Super Bowl appearances, and an NFL MVP right now. Somebody like Mac Jones, coming from Alabama, never really played with deficits, played behind NFL caliber offensive lines, at least two to four of his wide receivers, top 20 picks in the NFL draft. To me, Mac Jones, if he lands in the right spot with the right coaching and personnel around him, he'll thrive. If he doesn't, then he might be a wasted talent. So where do you stand on somebody like Mac Jones? Like, to me, if he goes to San Francisco, I think he'll thrive. if he goes to New England with that coaching and personnel, he'll thrive. But if he went to Jacksonville at number one overall, and it'll probably be a bust.
That's an interesting point. And I have to say, I agree with it in that sense. And I think that's actually, I generally think of that as kind of true with a lot of the less mobile quarterbacks, is that they're going to be hampered more immediately by a weaker O-line oftentimes, just because they don't necessarily have as much mobility to move around in the pocket, scramble outside the pocket. And I think that would be my fear with Mac Jones in terms of his landing spot. And it's why I think that the going to the 49ers is an acceptable destination and does make sense, because we've seen someone like Garoppolo, who I feel has a weaker overall skill set, succeed there. So putting in a Mac Jones where he has a solid offensive line, we've seen the offense that they could run around a quarterback like Garoppolo and how successful they can be. So I really like, for Mac Jones specifically, I think a 49ers landing spot is a really good one. As opposed to, like you said, in a Jacksonville landing spot,
right,
it's a lot more difficult. Just in addition to it being a boneheaded move to pass on Lawrence, it is more difficult to see him being at least even an average contributor there, where there's so many changes that he'll have to focus on from the college to NFL transition.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, good stuff. All right, let's get to our little Dynasty Keeper listener question here. But by the way, we'll say that if you want to email us any question you have, literally anything, actually, we'll answer anything. We don't care. FFFaceoff@gmail.com. Send those questions. Anthony gets them. He'll put them on the show, Doc. We'll have a good time with them. This is Trace from Canada. So he says, hi, boys.
He even used A.
Yeah.
A boys.
So there you go. Good times. So, hey, just a shout out from Vancouver, Canada. I love the show and the content. Thank you very much. I'm hoping to get this answer on the podcast. You're going to. 12-team full point PPR. He needs to keep two. He also mentions, though, before we get to the names, he's also a big pizza and craft beer enthusiast. It sounds like
Mike might get into a fist fight over pizza.
Right. If things ever get back to normal and the border opens up, I'd like to travel to New York or Chicago. Who has the better pizza, craft beer? Any suggestions? This is what Anthony mentioned about fist fight. Me and Anthony will fight to the death, just like Doomsday and Superman. I'm going to say New York has the best pizza. But I will say, craft beer, Chicago has some fantastic craft beer. I'll just put that out there. I'm not even gonna let Anthony answer, Josh, because I know he's gonna mouth off about Jersey pizza, and I'm not a
beer drinker.
You're not.
And apparently, when I have too much whiskey, it doesn't turn out well. But I will answer about pizza, and I think Jersey pizza, especially at the Jersey Shore, if you go to the Seaside Heights Boardwalk in Three Brothers, is outstanding.
No. Okay. Good for you. But Josh, we'll get to the players, but beer and pizza. You have any thoughts on that? New York, Chicago, who has a better pizza, better craft beer?
So this will be a letdown to, I think, both cities in a sense.
Okay.
With pizza, I do like New York pizza, but I have never been to Chicago. So I feel like it's kind of an incomplete comparison, where do I like the knockoff deep dish pizza that I get in California on the West Coast?
Huh.
Yes. Could I see myself enjoying Chicago pizza? Yes. With the craft beer question, I'm from San Diego. I have to give the edge to San Diego.
Wow,
I have yet to experience another city that can compete with our IPA game as an IPA enthusiast. So
okay.
I feel like I'm just angering everyone out there, all the Midwest East Coast fans.
You're also intriguing me, though, because now I want to go to San Diego and have some good IPAs, because I enjoy a good IPA myself. The actual question, though, was he needs two keepers here. Jonathan Taylor, Aaron Jones, George Kittle, Chris Godwin, Allen Robinson, and James Robinson. No relation. So he's got to pick two there. Josh, I can read off the names again if you need it. But any thoughts there on two players that should be kept full points PPR?
So I think Jonathan Taylor you have to keep. And I don't think there should be any debate that that's one of your keepers. Yeah. We're looking at probably the Dynasty RB1 at worst dynasty RB3. So I think when you're looking at someone there who's a top three dynasty asset at worst, you just, that's the guy that you have to keep. 2-3 weeks ago, I think I would have leaned Kittle as the second one, but now that Aaron Jones re-signed with the Packers, which I think is the best landing spot that could have happened for him, is going back to the team where he had back-to-back top five running back seasons, then I've got to go Aaron Jones. Yeah. I know he's getting a little bit older. However, I think even if you get 2 years out of him, one elite year and then one good or great year, that that's more than worth it with your edge over the field at running back to be able to have a Taylor Jones core going forward.
Josh, you believe, because there is some on this show who, and I am for one who believe that the top two running backs in this year's free agent class, Aaron Jones and Chris Carson, their best landing spots was staying home, and they did. But I've had others on this show say that, and not Mike, but say that the Packers didn't use Aaron Jones correctly. And to me, maybe Mike McCarthy didn't. But in the past, I mean, Matt LaFleur, Aaron Jones flourished, and I believe Aaron Rodgers, because outside of Devontae Adams, and maybe you, if you want to rope in Robert Tonyan, he has a trust with them, there is not another receiver on that team. Like, Aaron Jones is the second or third receiver that Aaron Rodgers trusts.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a tired narrative that you just have to look at the running back carries to determine whether a guy is being used properly, and that Aaron Jones didn't get enough touches, when really the touches that we want him to get are in the receiving game, which with how shallow the Packers receiving core is, that you can just pencil in Aaron Jones for 4 to 5 targets a game. And I mean, we've seen it with Kamara finishing as the RB1 without an elite carry total. Aaron Jones, I believe, was the RB2, if not 3 in 2019. Where he still didn't even have that many carries. So I think that the whole Aaron Jones doesn't get the bell cow treatment, I like that. It keeps him healthy and he gets more receptions. And I don't really know why we want to ever pigeonhole, especially a smaller back like Aaron Jones, into a Derrick Henry type role. Right. I'm not excited about that. And the Packers have clearly demonstrated that they're going to give him that incredibly juicy role for both fantasy. And then just, if you're a real-life fan of the Packers, you want your running back to be efficient per touch and staying healthy. And being deployed as a weapon on any kind of down, pass downs, run downs. So, yeah, I really don't think there was... Miami would have been a good spot. I could see that working out well. But I really didn't think there was anything even close, honestly, to that Packers landing spot, just returning there.
You know, in 14 games last season, he played 16 in 2019, obviously, which was his breakout year. But 14 games last year, still managed an RB4 finish in fantasy points per game, according to Player Profiler.
And I'll just say this. The only other spot that I thought I would like for Aaron Jones was if it was the Falcons. I just thought the Falcons was a good opportunity for a running back to be used now that they have a new head coach there. But again, clearly Green Bay was the best spot. And, you know, to your point, Josh, I know Packers fans, and they were elated when it was announced that he was going back there. So they're happy. I'm sure Aaron Jones is happy. And despite what you say about his usage, if you draft him, you will be happy as well. So there you go. As we start to get into a little bit of, you know, dynasty here, some dynasty rookies, so on and so forth, I wanted to ask a question, Josh, because, you know, there's dynasty, I feel like, is growing in popularity. More and more people are starting to do dynasty leagues. I think a product of that is also people just... they can't wait to just draft. They want to just draft. They want to, like, they hate to let fantasy go. So this is the best way to do it. Do a startup league. So then all of a sudden you realize you're in like 20 startup leagues and you don't know how the hell it happened. But do you think that newcomers to dynasty, do you think that they get a little overwhelmed or they get a little carried away as far as startup drafts when considering age? Or not even so much age, just... if it's not a guy who has, you know, three years or less, you need to drop him. in your rankings? Do you think people need sometimes get a little over-exaggerated with that?
I'd say the biggest thing that I like to tell new Dynasty gamers is that there's always going to be quality wide receivers later in the draft, and that I generally like to get my running backs early, and you don't have to. However, if you look later on in Dynasty drafts, there is always a Jarvis Landry, a Marvin Jones, these guys that are consistently a wide receiver two or wide receiver three, where you can just bank on 170 plus PPR points every single year. There's always those guys in the later rounds. So I think that's the biggest thing that I see newer Dynasty players struggling with is I like to round out my wide receiver core a little bit later, and that I'm not opposed to getting some of the young studs like an AJ Brown, a CD Lamb, Justin Jefferson. Yeah, if you want to take those guys early, that's great. You're going to have so many more years of high-end production from someone like that as compared to most running backs. But if you're trying to get all three, four, five wide receivers in your core super early, I believe that the opportunity cost there is just too much. And that's really where I see people struggle is that next thing you know, you've hit round 10 and you just start grabbing backup running backs one after another, and that churning those over in Dynasty. Yes, there's a good chance one of those guys might do something. However, if you just load up on three or four veteran-ish wide receivers, that can be your receiving core. And you could get by in 2021 with Tyler Boyd, Marvin Jones, Jarvis Landry, those three right there, if that's what you're starting with in your lineup each week, you can still win the title. But if your three starting running backs are these backups that you're grabbing in the equivalent, unless every single backup running back that you grab happens to have an injury to the starter, you're going to be frustrated. Yeah. And that's the biggest mistake that I see newer Dynasty gamers making. Listen,
Josh, I'm with you here. And Mike can attest to this. Mike and I, we were both new to this podcast when we started this up, and really both new to GridironExperts.com. We both entered this Gridiron Experts Dynasty League, and last year I finally won it. And if you look at my team top to bottom, you'll say, how the hell didn't he win this every year? And the issue was, Mike, you know my team. And it's the running back position. Where in that startup draft, I picked up Jordan Howard and Ty Montgomery. That was the year Ty Montgomery was supposed to be a monster, but my receivers, my quarterbacks, my IDP, my tight ends were so deep. It's like, how am I not even getting past the first round of the playoff? I finally won it last year because I made a move to acquire Kareem Hunt. And I also never gave up on J.D. McKissic because I have a thing for ex receivers who become running backs. I just have a thing for them. But outside of that, it's you hit the nail on the head. You need running backs.
Yeah, with a Kareem Hunt, that's not even that exciting of a running back.
But he's good still enough. Productive.
And yeah, and in order to get that guy, where Kareem Hunt, I've talked on a couple podcasts about, he's kind of like the gatekeeper to the cliff the past couple years, where whoever drafts Kareem Hunt got the last viable running back. And that after that, there's true question marks if this guy is going to give you 10 or more fantasy points a game. And if you think about Kareem Hunt, where he's kind of the last guy that you're excited to start at running back, right after that, there's nothing. So his cost is so high, as opposed to many wide receivers that are going to score a fairly similar amount of fantasy points on any given week, the cost to acquire them will be a lot lower. And I think that it can be difficult when you back yourself in and you have to acquire one of those running backs. So I completely agree, where even the teams that can look unbelievable on paper, usually if there's something that holds them back in a 1QB league, it's usually the running backs. And then in a super flex league, sometimes it's the running backs. More often than not, they have aging quarterbacks and one of them retires or becomes the backup. And the next thing you know, they've got a wide receiver in their super flex spot, and they're all sorts of frustrated.
Yeah. So good stuff. And yeah, and Anthony, congratulations to you on your dynasty title. I'm sure you'll be reminding me of
you
that.
You know how bad I wanted that one. You know how bad I wanted it.
I know. Well, I could tell because you're still talking about it. So I know. So
yeah, I didn't know if I could congratulate you because I didn't know if there was some kind of tension there. So Mike, I'm glad you broke the ice.
But like my quarterbacks, and it's not super flex, but I had Aaron Rodgers, Josh Allen, and my receivers, Julio Jones, Tyreek Hill. And this was when nobody liked Tyreek Hill, but I was a big Tyreek Hill guy after that first year. Tyler Lockett. I have CD. It's like the whole team's ridiculous. And my running back position was Ty Montgomery and Rex Burkhead. Like, no shit, I lost. I bought into that stupid Ty Montgomery narrative after that 1 year in Green Bay. And then he took the kick return out of the end zone and got cut. Whatever happened.
Are you good now, Anthony?
Yes, I'm good.
You good?
I'm good. I'm reminiscing. Yeah, yes.
Okay.
I might pick him back up just to piss you off.
Just for the hell of it. All right, we're going to get in now to some dynasty rookie rankings and dynasty talks to some of these rookies. I want to try and talk about some other players besides quarterback because that tends to be the hot topic, of course. But I do want to ask one question about quarterbacks. Matthew Berry, of course, he's a pretty famous guy. Some of you might have heard of him before. He had a tweet earlier today, said, currently in a rookie draft for a super flex, i.e. 2QB, tight end premium scoring, 1.5 PPR. It's the third year of the league. Kyle Pitts went first overall. Trevor Lawrence went second. He wanted to know everybody's thoughts. Currently, the vote is split at 50-50. A lot of analysts are telling commenters that they're crazy for saying that they would go with Pitts. The commenters are saying, haven't you seen the vertical jump and the 40? He's going to be the greatest player that you've ever seen. I said commoners. And if you guys don't like it, whatever. I don't care. It's my show. But Josh, I'm not sure if you saw that tweet, but what's your takeaway there? Kyle Pitts going first, Trevor Lawrence going second. Is that outlandish or is that okay?
I really think that's outlandish.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is with, especially you really want the high floor quarterback in one QB. Yes. You're shooting for the high ceiling quarterback when you only start one, but right. In super flex where quarterback is so scarce, the worst thing that you can do is run out of quarterbacks. And I love the high floor options like a Trevor Lawrence, where what's he going to fail? Maybe 5-10% of the time. It's very hard to see Trevor Lawrence not being a starting quarterback for multiple years in the NFL. Kyle Pitts, on the other hand, plays the most brutal offensive position for us to predict in terms of any kind of skill position. It's so much easier to pencil in running backs and wide receivers and understand them. And my biggest issue with Kyle Pitts is that he's a tight end. And is a team going to use him like Mike Gesicki, where he's frequently operating out of the slot? I hope so. I'd probably have him higher in my rankings if I could guarantee it, though still not as high as Lawrence. But until a team guarantees me that they're not going to have him in line, taking shots from defensive ends and edge rushers, linebackers, guys much bigger than him and heavier than him, beating him up right before he can even start his route.
Yeah.
That's not the guy that I want to put such immense draft capital into, as opposed to a Trevor Lawrence, where not only is he also kind of a unicorn for how good he is as a prospect for his position, but the NFL protects quarterbacks. The NFL doesn't protect tight ends. No. So if Kyle Pitts is in line 50, 60, 70% of the time, it's going to be very difficult for him to hit his potential. And we've seen too many of these hyper-athletic tight ends like Njoku, O.J. Howard, Evan Engram, these guys that are taken early in both the NFL draft and in rookie drafts. And you always hear that this guy's generational. He's too athletic to fail. And They usually fail. And I think it's because of the position and because of how difficult it is on their body. So give me Trevor Lawrence. I don't think it's particularly close, even in 1.5 PPR or whatever tight end premium format they're using.
I'll never understand how it still boggles my mind. I'll never be able to grasp it. And I think it's a good thing. And Anthony, I know you're in the same boat with me. I'll never be able to grasp how people could just overvalue a player while, yes, they're immensely talented. They're getting drafted into the NFL. We already know that they're immensely talented. This is not breaking news. Like, we didn't just wake up and have a revelation one day and go, oh my God, Kyle Pitts he's a fantastic athlete. Like, we know this already.
You know,
but to just project these guys as being whatever before there's even a landing spot is just, I'll never understand it. I think I'm better off for not understanding it, to be quite honest. And Anthony, I'm sure you have something to say, so feel free to jump on in.
No, I brought this up maybe off air, Mike, was about Kyle Pitts and the Colin Coward interview with Vernon Davis, and it's like somebody tweeted it, and I wish I saved the tweet, but it's like nobody's ever seen Kyle Pitts before. Well, yes, you have, Vernon Davis, a long, long time ago. How much of a comparison is there between a Vernon Davis and a Kyle Pitts? And I also heard Vernon Davis on national media. I listen to a lot of FS1 sports talk, and he was on the show. And it's like, if anybody's really worried about his run blocking ability, he'll figure it out a couple of years in. Like how much is this? Could this be a concern for Kyle Pitts? Because we have seen this athletic type at tight end before.
So I just pulled up Vernon Davis's career on Pro Football Reference.
Nice.
And just a quick skim, you can see he had 2 years with double-digit touchdowns. And aside from those 2 years, he's looking a whole lot like a middling to low-end tight end one.
Right.
Which is essentially worthless because there's usually 15 to 20 guys every single season that are kind of the mid to low-end tight end one to high-end tight end two. So
his career was almost lost until Mike Singletary kicked him off the field that one game towards the end of a home game, kicked him off the field, sent him to the locker room. From that point on, he was a more disciplined player and much more productive throughout the rest of his career. But yeah, go ahead, go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think there's this one interesting factor that not enough people acknowledge with the Kyle Pitts thing, and that's Travis Kelce having by far the greatest tight end season that we've ever witnessed in 2020, and then having Pitts come out the year after. So I think there's a lot going on there where if Pitts had come out in 2020, I don't think that the hype is quite this strong, and that it's really that for fantasy gamers, they remember, wow, 2020, I would have won the championship, but this damn team had Travis Kelce getting 20 points a game at the tight end position.
Yep.
And the thing is, like, Travis Kelce doesn't even have seasons like that every year. Yes, Travis Kelce's kind of an outlier, but even still, this was an outlier season from the greatest outlier that we have at the position right now. And I think that really is helping Pitts' stock in these rookie drafts, because why aren't we dwelling on George Kittle? A guy right. that blocked more than he probably should have just in terms of staying healthy, and he missed most of the season. What about Mark Andrews? Super disappointing. In 2020, TJ Hawkinson took sort of a step forward, but not as much as we hoped.
Right.
And everyone just keeps leaning on this Travis Kelce one when it's basically Kelce and Waller, and then pretty much every other tight end underwhelmed overall. And then I guess Tanyan did well purely because of touchdowns. Right. But just in terms of usage, it was really just two tight ends out of the entire position that genuinely wowed me. So. Yeah. It's just the probabilities, no matter how you look at it, are stacked against Kyle Pitts.
No, I'm happy you guys brought up the, it was a few years ago, O.J. Howard, Evan Ingram, David Njoku. They were all first round picks. Like, shouldn't that scare a fantasy football manager away? A little bit? No?
You would think. And
I know Evan Engram made the Pro Bowl this year, which was so well deserved.
If he didn't make the Pro Bowl, then they were calling me next. So
I mean, shouldn't that deter especially a dynasty manager away?
You would think that it would, but we're a fickle breed, and everyone wants to have I mean, I want to have the ceiling. Everyone wants the ceiling. Right. The issue is not everyone understands what the actual probability of a guy hitting their ceiling is. I think that's the issue is I am not in any way saying that Pitts doesn't have the Travis Kelce ceiling. I think he does. It's just that the probability of him hitting that is going to be so much lower than the probability that Trevor Lawrence becomes a quarterback you can throw into your QB1 slot in a super flex league for the next 10 plus years.
Yeah. Mike, there you go. Well, Anthony, what do you
got? We're closing in on 20 minutes left in the show. I know Josh has other endeavors to do a little bit later. Instead of going against Josh rankings versus the ECR, why don't we get into the questions at the bottom of the show sheet? And I prefaced this earlier about landing spot is everything, and I have the big but. Which players, if any, Josh, can succeed despite landing spot?
So there's a few that come to mind. They're mostly at the top of the rankings for everyone. But I think it's worth still just pointing out, I think Ja'Marr Chase is fairly landing spot. I think that's why he should be the clear-cut wide receiver one in this class, where it's not really close. He doesn't necessarily have any kind of profile flags at all. If the worst thing you can say about him is that he took his health too seriously during the COVID season and then got absolutely yoked and ran a sub 4.440, then that seems like the clear-cut wide receiver one to me. No issues there. How do you guys feel about Chase before I move on to the couple other guys that I feel will succeed no matter the landing spot?
I do like Chase quite a bit. From what I've seen. Again, I always get into this draft game a little bit late, but I mean, from what I've seen, it's like you said, it looks like he checks all of the boxes that need to be checked. My only thought when we talk about landing spots and so on and so forth, and we've heard a lot of Joe Burrow trying to campaign for Chase, and I'm wondering if, you know, what I think in my head is, well, should they go ahead and get Sewell, or should they go ahead?
Right. That's the question of questions.
Right. That is the question of questions.
They need to get an offensive lineman.
Yes!
I truly don't understand how that team can look at what happened in 2020 and look at their prized possession, Joe Burrow, taking sack after sack, and then ultimately having about as devastating an injury as a quarterback can have as a rookie because the O-line was so dreadful. So, yes, it would be nice to load up on weapons for them to take Kyle Pitts or Ja'Marr Chase. But, I mean, if you don't protect Burrow and you have Ja'Marr Chase, Tyler Boyd, and T. Higgins taking passes from Ryan Finley, no one wins there.
This is why we have you on the show. This is why we have you on the show, Josh. To tell everybody the way it should be. Because Penei Sewell to that Bengals offense has a lot more value than a Ja'Marr Chase, at least in 2021.
Yeah, exactly. You can't neglect the O-line at the expense of the skill position players. We see it year after year where players underperform because the O-line is so terrible as an overall unit.
Yeah. The next question we have here, Anthony, you asked about succeeding despite the landing spot. Which players are landing spot needy, in your opinion, Josh?
So I mentioned a little bit before. I'll skim over this. I think Kyle Pitts, purely because of the usage, I just hope he goes somewhere creative where he can line up more in the slot, like a Mike Gesicki does. And then in terms of other guys that we haven't talked about yet, I really think someone like Devonta Smith is going to be landing spot dependent. And he's just a little bit worrisome to me because of how we know nothing about his height or weight. All we know is that he's probably sub 170. That if you're going to refuse to get weighed and then say you're 170, you're probably not 170, or else you would have just gotten weighed. So I think he's going to be landing spot dependent just in terms of how a team's going to get him in space and make sure that his elite traits aren't overshadowed by his what seems like to be fairly mediocre for the position speed and then like first percentile weight and BMI. So I think in that sense, Devonta Smith. And then the other guy, he's a personal favorite of mine. And it sucks to say this, but Rondale Moore is totally landing spot dependent. How creative is a team going to be using him? We haven't really seen someone of his height succeed in the NFL in a long time. I'm going to bet on Rondale Moore because I don't really think he's that much of an outlier just in terms of how dominant he was at age 18 in college. And that if you put up 1,258 receiving yards as an 18-year-old freshman, mm-hmm. you've already demonstrated that it doesn't matter what size you are. You were winning against bigger, stronger competition. So we know he can do it. My fear is just that because of his size, a team could use him incorrectly and not give him enough credit. And that's why I think a landing spot like Kansas City would just be incredible, where we've seen far inferior talents like a Mecole Hardman succeed per touch. And Rondale Moore is the kind of guy that you're just going to want to feed. So I think somewhere like KC would just be incredible for him. But if he goes to a less creative offense where they're not necessarily where there's no track record of how they can manufacture touches for their skill position players, next thing you know, you're dealing with someone who's 5'7", does not have the most varied route tree, and he's getting two manufactured touches a game. And next thing you know, he looks like Mecole Hardman does on the Chiefs. And that's my fear with Rondale Moore.
Now, let's start at the top here. Kyle Pitts. I have Kyle Pitts almost pegged to the Miami Dolphins with a Mike Gesicki. And you know, as to Brian Flores' connection with New England and how they utilize the two tight end sets, and we are seeing that to a much lesser extent with Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry this offseason of free agency, could they have maybe moved up to that spot with Philadelphia to draft a Kyle Pitts and almost have a Pitts and Gesicki type of offense with those wide receivers and Parker and Will Fuller and give Tua Tagovailoa, listen, you have no more excuses now. We're giving you everything to succeed. We're giving you versatility at the tight end. We're giving you a modern offense that works. Is that, am I going off the rails here? Because I know other Dolphins fans, like a friend of the show, ATL Mikey, I know he gets a hard on every time I bring it up. Am I off the rails here? Uh-oh. Gosh, we don't have you
muted,
right now.
Josh.
You're muted, babe.
You're muted.
How about now?
There he is.
I had to cough before, muted myself, and it looks like I was just a little too conservative unhitting that mute button.
That's
okay. All right, Kyle Pitts in Miami. I really like it for real football.
Mm.
However, I think for fantasy, it's kind of the worst nightmare. It's like what we're seeing in New England, where you take two talented tight ends, and Jonnu goes there, we get excited.
The circle
The
jerk.
Next domino of Henry goes there, and next thing you know, we're no longer excited. I think that in fantasy, it would just absolutely be crushing. I'm a San Diego guy. I've forgiven the Chargers enough to still root for them. Mm. I really think the best landing spot for real life and fantasy, if he somehow makes it to the Chargers,
I want to say pick 13, or if the
Chargers trade up, you're just replacing Hunter Henry with someone who's better in every single way. You pair him with a young quarterback like Justin Herbert, who has already demonstrated that he can make borderline UDFA type guys like a Jalen Guyton and a Tyron Johnson relevant whenever they're the starter. Just imagine Kyle Pitts, Keenan Allen, and Justin Herbert and Austin Eckler. There are just playmakers at every level of the field. And that's really where I want him to go is the Chargers, to be completely honest, even though
I don't hate
I'm
that,
still,
even though I like personally, I like Jared Cook for the year, despite the age, I like the landing spot for Jared Cook. But you know,
go on, Mike,
because I'm going to go on to Rondale Moore for a minute. So let's finish up our Kyle Pitts conversation.
No. You go on to that because I was about to segue to a quarterback question. So you definitely get in there with your
Josh,
Rondale Moore point.
You bring up Rondale Moore in the same conversation as Mecole Hardman. And Mike can attest to this. I was a big Tyreek Hill guy in Kansas City before anybody else liked him. I liked Mecole Hardman. And to me, Mecole Hardman, and Josh, you know this better than I do, He was raw coming into the NFL, only about two, maybe 2 years, maybe three of wide receiver experience coming to the NFL. Maybe this is the year it all comes together, but then you bring in a Rondale Moore into this Andy Reid type of offense. And you said another type of creative offense. And when you bring up a creative coach, there's two that come to mind outside of Andy Reid. One of them is Sean Payton. The other one is Kyle Shanahan.
So I was actually going to say that my second spot for Moore would be the Saints. Mm. So you kind of nailed it. I think that's another spot where it's a fairly wide open depth chart. And we've seen how creative Sean Payton can be with tailoring an offense to the individual player's abilities. So completely agree there. The 49ers, my only worry with him going there is that they already have Debo, Ayuk, right, Kittle, right. And it's an offense that consistently runs the ball quite often per game. So I want to make sure that Rondale Moore's in a position where he can get enough manufactured touches in addition to his normal receiving work, where he can succeed in fantasy football as well as just being a valuable piece to an offense. So that's why the Saints would be my second option, and why the 49ers would make me a little bit hesitant to push the button on Rondale Moore in the later first round of a rookie draft.
Good stuff. We have time for two more questions, Anthony.
Absolutely.
Oh, I was going to say, we can actually, I just got a text. My commitment in 30 minutes has been pushed back another 30 minutes.
Oh,
so if you guys aren't immediately scrambling to get me out the door, we can take a few minutes and we don't need to gloss over anything. I'm freed, boys.
You go. All right. Well, I wanted to mention, I wasn't going to give him a shout out on the show because he asked this question, Anthony, that being ATL, who is, again, he is a frequenter. He's like our groupie. He's like, you know, he just follows the show around and, you know, wants to make snide comments. But Anthony, he asked me to ask on this show, following the Sam Darnold trade to the Panthers, we all assume Zach Wilson's going to be the next quarterback of the New York Jets. So he wanted to know, where is Zach Wilson going to get traded to 4 years from now?
Come on.
When he can't cut it as the Jets quarterback.
He's an asshole Dolphins fan.
He is an asshole Dolphins fan.
So, and I like ATL, but he upset me a couple weeks ago.
Yes, he did. Yes. But I will use that to get into, and I'll ask this of you, Josh, as we talk about Zach Wilson. Who is your pre-draft must-have quarterback?
I think the guy that I'm looking at the most is Justin Fields. We've seen so many guys now recently succeeding where they have the 4.4 speed and they're a very talented passer as well. And I think that's just kind of an element that nobody else in this class can compete with to quite the degree that Fields can. I already mentioned, yes, I would rather, all else equal, I want Lawrence, especially in Superflex. But in terms of just ADP, I like the idea that you can trade back from the 101 and be able to still get someone like a Fields multiple picks later. So he's the guy that I really feel like is probably the best value. And then to a lesser extent, Trey Lance, just the sense that he does have such high-end range of outcomes where Trey Lance's tool set looks a lot like Josh Allen. And these are the types of quarterbacks in the modern NFL that have been really succeeding, both in real life, so they keep the starting job, and then in fantasy, where every single year they offer that dual threat ability and the goal line touchdowns that they'll poach from the running back. So probably Fields, and then to a lesser extent Lance, where at ADP it just seems like a screaming value currently.
You know, you mentioned Lance, and the one thing we've heard about Lance is that he, amongst those quarterbacks at the top, he's probably the one who would be the biggest quote unquote project. You know, maybe that's too extreme of a word, but whatever. Do you view him in that sense? And for example, say the Niners took Trey Lance, because there is that little small contingency who says, hey, it could be Trey Lance. Do you think that he is a project, or does he just seem like a project because all of these other quarterbacks are a lot more polished?
I'd say that he's a project in the sense that he doesn't have much starting experience in college. Right. And we've seen enough guys now who only have one real true year as the starter. and how that's backfired. Like, I know Trubisky did not actually start that many games and was where he was playing at an elite level. And that guys that don't have multiple elite quarterback seasons, that is the risk with them, is that they're just not quite ready to, and that their decision making isn't quite as polished. So I do agree that Trey Lance, it currently seems like more of a developmental quarterback, just from the sense that I don't think if you plug him in from day one in San Fran, I don't think he necessarily is terrible, but I don't think you're maximizing the potential of that draft pick or his potential as a quarterback if you throw him in from day one with how raw he is currently.
Well said. I dig it. Anthony, did you have anything on that?
On what?
On Trey Lance, on the quarterbacks, anything at all?
I mean, on the quarterbacks in general, outside of Trevor Lawrence, like I said, I ranked, and I'm going to be reassessing this after the pro days, and I'm going to add Mac Jones over at thegamedanfl.com. I had ranked my top three quarterbacks, after Trevor Lawrence, and I had Zach Wilson number two, Trey Lance number three, and Justin Fields number one. Trey Lance is one of those players where I want to put higher, but I just can't right now. And it's not really because of size or anything else. It's because I'm still trying to waver the fact that how much am I buying into Zach Wilson's quote-unquote off-the-field issues? Because, Mike, you know this better than anybody, and Josh, you don't know this about me. I put a lot, like, when it came to Kyler Murray, it was, well, he didn't really interview right. And I take all these off-the-field personality characteristics, maybe sometimes too much, into consideration. So when it comes to Zach Wilson, oh, they say he's spoiled this and that. So it's like, I don't want to overvalue one and undervalue another. Does that make sense?
It's a little dramatic.
I am, but Mike, you know I'm a very fucking dramatic person.
You are a very dramatic person. This is also true. This is true.
I don't feel qualified to speak on that as the guy that's the resident stats guy and just tries to dismiss personality as much as possible process.
But there you go.
I have heard those issues come up as well. I will say that. I will not say that it affects my process, but I am aware of it.
I also heard size. Like Zach Wilson is not exactly small in terms of a human man. But when it comes to Zach Wilson's size, I've heard knocks on, you know, maybe he's a little bit too brittle of the three quarterbacks after Trevor Lawrence. Like, I wish I was his height and weight.
Yeah, I think people get too picky sometimes.
Right.
I haven't seen anything definitive that lets me know that a guy that's 6'3"
right.
and over 200 pounds is too small to play quarterback. So yeah. We should retire that narrative already. I'm not sure why it still exists, but at this point there's enough quote unquote small quarterbacks in the NFL that I don't feel like in this day and age with how much the rule changes are now protecting the quarterback, it really doesn't seem like this should be as much of an issue when quarterbacks are taking fewer hits and they're not taking as potentially painful of hits, where they're not taking as many hits to the head and neck area. They're not taking hits below the knees. So I don't really understand why we haven't adjusted our narratives as the rule changes adjust. If I have qualms with Zach Wilson, it's not in any way related to his size.
Okay. And again, that's fair. That's why I go to guys like you on this show.
Yeah.
Because I pay attention, and maybe it's just because of how it was brought up in this industry, way too much into national media and national scrutiny to these guys.
Well, there you go. So while Anthony honestly,
if it wasn't for player profiler was the site that got me interested in analytics, I will admit that. And Matt Kelly and what he's done with his brand and guys like you, Josh. And Mike, you can attest to this. For like 2 years, I was so against you need analytics. You need it all, in my personal opinion, to really do this job right.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Thanks for the ringing endorsement. I would agree. Matt Kelly is kind of what got me sucked into this industry was I thought he had such an innovative and unique mind compared to everything that I'd heard before him. So that's really what drew me in, was like his combination of statistical intuition and shit talking was something I had never heard before.
Guess
and
what?
I was like, yeah. I want to be a part of this.
It's like,
this is so fascinating.
It's like to me, the biggest, the knocks I heard on Matt Kelly when I first got into him a couple of years ago was, oh, he's not a nice guy. I'm not the nicest fucking guy in the world either.
I am not a nice guy.
Huff's nice a dick. Fish.
Yes. This is true. My wife just said I'm average. So,
yeah. Yeah. What I like to tell people is that working for Matt and everything that he puts out there, he's not racist. He's not homophobic. He's not sexist. There are so many others in this industry that are. I don't quite understand why you have a problem with someone who talks a big game in what I think is one of the more respectful manners in general, the way that he does it. So I generally just
love him to death.
Hard for me to sympathize with some of the people when you see who they're idolizing or who they're retweeting and looking up to. And then you just say, you know what? There's some kind of value disconnect here where your morals are bending sometimes, but not others. So,
like, you know, if there is one project I look forward to every year is the draft kit. You know, this is going to be my third year on the draft kit. And it's like, am I going to even get an invite this year? And once I get it, I feel like it just makes me feel good to even be considered by him, because that's how much I respect his level in this industry.
Well, there you go. So Anthony is most certainly not avoiding Matt Kelly. He is avoiding people in the NFL with character questions coming into the NFL. So we'll phrase our last question like this. Who is your top player to avoid at running back and wide receiver?
So wide receiver, I hinted at him before. At ADP, it's Devonta Smith. So just looking at the Fantasy Pros ECR that you sent on over to me, Devonta Smith is currently in one quarterback leagues, the sixth overall player going off the board. Ooh. And I know everyone talks a lot like, oh my God, he's so light. And I don't know why you can say that that's a disqualifier. We haven't seen someone like that. How do you know this and that? So I'll make kind of an analogy that no one's heard before. Hopefully this can potentially convert some huge Smith truthers over to my side, where I don't hate any of these players. I just try and draft based on probabilities. So Devonta Smith, we don't know his height. We don't know his weight. We don't know how fast he is. However, we can assume that none of it's that good, or else he would have tested and weighed in. So just imagine that you're deciding between two players. And if I'm just looking at where he's going in ADP, he's right next to someone like Javonte Williams. So what if I told you that you could get a guy with feature back size, broken tackle monster, competent receiver? According to everyone, he's NFL ready to be a bell cow from day one. Hmm. Or at a very similar ADP, you could have a wide receiver. We don't know his size, but we know it's not good. We don't necessarily know pretty much any measurable, but we can assume that it's below average, or else he would have tested. And then, it's totally fine, because I'm sure he dominated against college competition early, so we can put away any of those fears that transitioning to bigger, stronger, faster opponents in the NFL, he'll be fine, right? Well, he didn't really produce until he was 21 years old in college. So we don't actually know if he can produce against bigger, stronger, faster competition. And if you had all that information, and the only thing that I'm removing essentially is that he has a Heisman trophy, which the last time I checked is not predictive in any way of NFL success.
Nope.
Devonta Smith is my huge stay away at ADP. And again, do I think he's one of the top receivers in this class? Yes. I've seen some of the tape. I'm not a tape guy, but you can just tell he stands out when he plays. But with the profile that I just mentioned, it's so hard for you to convince me that you should have a first half of the first round rookie pick on that guy with so much unknown.
There you go, Anthony. So that there's that. Anthony, do we have anything else we want to go over as we get ready to ride off into the sunset today?
I mean, I think we covered everything, Josh. This was outstanding. This is exactly what I wanted out of this program today. And I couldn't stress this to you or even our listeners enough. Mike and I, like we're football guys, but like we're not going to sit here and pretend that we're draft experts. You know, we're all good at our own things, and we want to bring guys like you in to educate our listeners on who these top prospects are and maybe, you know, why or why not you're against these top guys that other media markets are bringing out. Josh, you were outstanding, and thank you very much for coming on today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciated this. When you sent me the invite to come on this show originally a couple weeks ago, I was super excited. So looking forward to hearing how everyone likes this.
And listen, Josh, I was in Jamaica in the middle of February, and your shirt makes me want to move permanently to Jamaica.
There you go.
I think that's a good thing. That's kind of why I'm wearing this.
Damn right.
It's good. It's just good vibes all around. You can't be unhappy when you're looking at a shirt with plants on it. You can't do it.
You can't.
It's true. So, Josh, tell everybody again as we get ready to sign off. Tell everybody where they can follow you, where they can check out all of your work and all that good stuff.
Listen, I was hoping I got COVID in Jamaica, so I didn't gotta leave.
Very excitable.
So you can find me on Twitter at JLarkyTweets. You can find me on PlayerProfiler.com. A lot of the site stats I'm maintaining on the back end. Some of our new stats are ones that I'm responsible for, so always be on the lookout for that. And then you can also find me at breakoutfinder.com or download the Breakout Finder app on the App Store to be able to understand a little bit more about the running back and wide receiver predictive modeling work I do to help determine who has higher chances of succeeding when they make the transition from college to the NFL. And then you can find that rcodingsite.com if you want to be personally instructed by me and learn coding in R for analytics, where I'll teach you using exclusively football data sets to make it both fun and engaging and a very efficient way to learn a valuable new skill.
Yeah, that's very cool. People should they should definitely take that under advisement. Take up Josh on his offer most certainly. So, Anthony, anything to say as we get ready to ride off into the sunset today?
Yes, absolutely. If you're listening right now on Apple Podcasts, please subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rating and a 5-star review telling everyone why you love the show and why we are the best at what we do here at the FF Face Off. Because the more subscriptions, ratings, reviews that we get, the more people we can help dominate their fantasy football leagues and raise their NFL IQ as a whole. We will be back tomorrow, Mike, discussing AFC betting in terms of and really focusing on division winners. Can't wait for that show. Until then, have a good night. Mike, as always, take us home.
Yeah, it's like sometimes people call that way too early division picks, but it's not way too early anymore. Now it's just early because we already got free agency done. Now it's draft time. So it's early, but it's still fun, and you might learn something along the way. So definitely tune in tomorrow. Thank you again to Josh. Josh, this is where we have our awkward silence, and then we'll talk a little bit off air. But I'll tell everybody, for now, stay thirsty. Be kind to one another. If they ask you to wear a mask, COVID thing is still going on, so slap that mask on. We'll get through it soon, and we'll see you tomorrow. Cheers.